You're listening to your community radio station, KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL Halaiva. It's time for In the Garden on the Farm.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
Aloha, and welcome to In the Garden and on the Farm, your weekly radio program that cultivates the passion and knowledge to grow well with plants and animals. On today's show, we'll hear about a new online tool designed to help Hawaii growers understand their soil, focus on some problems and solutions related to drought and deluge, and explore the uses and debatable effectiveness of molasses. But first, we'd like to let you know that this KKCR program is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with our generous underwriters, Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe, Kauai Marine and Mower, Anahola Stringed Instruments, and Edible Hawaiian Islands Magazine.
Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe in Hanalei is proud to support KKCR and its ohana, offering organic groceries and produce, a cafe featuring fresh salad bar, hot meals and soups, fresh-made smoothies, and baked goods. Located in the heart of Hanalei, Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe, 826-0089.
Kauai Marine and Mower, located in Old Kapa'a Town, is proud to underwrite this KKCR program. Kauai Marine and Mower features Honda garden and lawn equipment and also Echo Power Equipment. 823-0556.
Anahola Stringed Instruments is proud to support KKCR. Mickey Sussman has been building Island Koa guitars, ukulele, and violins on Kauai since 1972. Time-honored design and special orders. Prompt and complete restoration, repair, and reforestation. AnaholaStringedInstruments.com or 822-1645.
Edible Hawaiian Islands is a subscription-based, advertiser-supported print and digital magazine, the only James Beard Award-winning food and drink magazine in the state of Hawaii. Edible Hawaiian Islands digital magazine may be enjoyed at ediblehi.com.
And thank you once again to our marvelous underwriters, and welcome to Eileen.
Thank you so much, Paul.
Eileen, it's great to have you. I'm so grateful that you're stepping up to allow Robin to take a much-deserved vacation. I hope she's having a super time. And I'm wondering if you could introduce yourself to our listeners.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I hope Robin's having a super time, too. She's such a garden goddess. Glad she's out playing in the ocean. Yeah, sure. I'd love to introduce myself. My name's Eileen Irvin. And I'm originally from Washington State. I'm a third generation organic gardener and native plant lover. I've been here on Kauai and Big Island for 17 years now in October. I've worked on large scale organic farms and CSAs on the island. I've also been a garden teacher at two Kauai elementary schools. And now I am working on my own project. I have my own business, Kauai Permaculture Collective. And the intention that I hold with my business is that I'm working to support a growing collective of people who are confident in growing their own food.
Yeah. Well, that certainly is what we focus in on the show every week here. So
yeah,
couldn't be better suited to join us. So thank you so much. We've got a packed show today, so we'll start as we do with our celestial session, looking to the heavenly skies above for inspiration and guidance on our planting, harvesting, and other garden and farming activities. And starting today with our Hawaiian moon phase, brought to us today by the 2015 Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council Hawaiian Lunar Calendar. That is a big title. And it is a beautiful thing that can be found on the web, as well the U.S. Naval Observatory's Astronomical Applications Department. Thanks to those guys. And today's Hawaiian moon is La'au Kū Lua. This is in The end of the second Anahulu, or Hawaiian moon week, known as Poi Poi, which means rounding or full, just experienced a most beautiful full moon. And I was actually lucky enough to see a moonbow with Krista a couple of nights ago, which was fabulous. Mm. And La'au Kulua will rise over Kauai tonight at 10:20 p.m. She'll reach her transit, her highest point in the sky overhead, at 4:54 a.m. tomorrow, and she'll set at 11:32 a.m. Thursday tomorrow. 66% of the moon's beautiful face will be illuminated, and we have the last quarter moon arriving this Friday, 6 minutes till midnight. And the Ike Kupuna, or the wisdom of the ancestors, around La'au Kulua, it's the second of the La'au moons, good for planting mai'a, bananas, ulu, breadfruit, and other trees. It is also a moon recommended for harvesting plants to be used as medicine, which is timely for some people who need it. So I suppose if you're sick at this time of the month, you've planned well, because the energy in those medicinal plants is at its highest and ready to be harvested now.
Now, Paul, I'd love to share with you the biodynamic outlook for this coming week. There's a lot going on this week. I was so excited to look into this last night. Beginning at 5 a.m. this morning, the moon began moving through the constellation of Aries, which brings with it warm, hot weather, encouraging a strong fruiting time lasting through Thursday at 9 p.m. This is a time to harvest the fruits of your labor. Beans, peas, corn, tomatoes, cucumbers, greens, and pumpkins may be prolific right now in your garden. But if you are wishing to cure your pumpkins, I was learning that it's best to wait for a fruiting time during an ascending moon.
Yes.
All right. So just...
And it's always a good idea to let pumpkins cure a bit before, even if you plan on eating them soon, they develop, continue to develop their sweetness and flavors, yes?
Exactly, yes. So during this time also, while the moon is moving through the constellation of Aries, beekeepers will observe bees gathering nectar. Mm. However, I wanted to add that this is a good time to be collecting seeds from your fruit-bearing plants. As the earth is warmed and thunderstorms strike and pass throughout Taurus's relatively long lunar influence between 9 p.m. Thursday and 11 a.m. Saturday, create some time to harvest and store root crops such as radish, beet, carrot, onion, and sweet potato.
It sounds like you have a well-stocked garden.
Yeah, I do. I just got back from a vacation, so it could be a little heftier, but it is. It's great. I am harvesting a lot of roots, and especially then on Saturday, that'll be at its peak. And while the moon is moving through that constellation of Taurus, you'll be noticing that bees are building their combs. A warmth trine continues to bring warm days, encouraging yet another fruiting time from 12 noon to 10 p.m. this coming Saturday. And from 11 p.m. Saturday through 12 p.m. Sunday, look to plant and harvest your roots once more. But then, by 1 p.m. Sunday, the moon will move into the light, bright constellation of Gemini as we begin our 14-day transplanting time here in the Northern Hemisphere, yeah, which saddles the upcoming new moon.
Mm-hmm. Super cool. I had the visual of... you know, the TV meteorologist standing in front of a screen and sort of pointing at these things. I thought how great it would be if there was a similar biodynamic visualization to the beautiful forecast that you've just given us. So pretty cool. And the timing of things and preparation being so important, had a stab at getting out and finally doing some foliar feeding this morning after super heavy rains, which we'll talk about a little bit later in the show. But I wasn't quite prepared. I didn't quite have everything together. And when it came down to it, there was a hole in the tank of my sprayer that needed mending. And that perfect timing with leaf, the leaf portion of the plant being stimulated over last night and into the morning today was lost because of my lack of preparation. The local weather conditions being perfect for it, had been looking up on foliar application and learning that actually high humidity is good for the ability for plants to uptake foliar applications. I had thought conversely that maybe a dry plant would be ready to soak it up like we are when we're thirsty, but it seems like it's been perfect condition. So just a good reminder for me to spend a little bit more time preparing myself so that I can take advantage of these windows as they come into view.
Well, thanks for bringing that up about the leaf being more open during the cool, humid weather. That makes sense because usually we would do a foliar spray in the morning when it's cooler also and more humid.
So cool. So it's somewhere in the medium range from the technical paper I was reading, 70 degrees being the ideal temperature for foliar feeding. So here in Hawaii, where we dip into the middle 80s around this time of year and most times around the year, and only getting down to the high 60s at night, then the we're really probably in a better state to do foliar feeding in Hawaii than maybe some other places, especially when it's humid. So that's pretty cool. So we're going to jump into some notable news. We've got some exciting things to tell you about. And we'll start out with some information that we're grateful for. Louisa Wooten of Kukunana Dairy forwarded us on this information about a USDA program which helps to offset transportation costs for farmers and ranchers in Hawaii, Guam, Alaska, American Samoa, and other U.S. territories. Well, we're considered geographically disadvantaged farmers if we're located in any of these areas. And so the U.S. Department of Agriculture has a program. It's been running for some years now where people residing in these outlying areas can apply for partial reimbursement for basically the shipping costs for approved items that you'd need for your farming operation, and you need to be basically marketing your produce. You have to be a bona fide production farmer. It can't be used for value-added product generation, but straight-up production for farmers and ranchers. It looked like 25% was the target from the research I did in terms of the amount that they would reimburse for the shipping costs up to $8,000, and could be really valuable for people. The shipping, of course, makes so many things a challenge here. So the way to do this, there's only so far you can get on the internet. You can look up the information at fsa.usda.gov/price support. Then look for the reimbursement transportation cost payment link in the left-hand column of that internet page. But ultimately, you'll find, as I did, you can't apply online. You have to go into your Farm Service Agency office, which here on Kauai is located on Rice Street at 4334 Rice Street, Suite 103. And you have to be signed up with them, have an account essentially like that, but certainly a worthwhile reason for doing it. And there is a deadline, that's the importance of this story, to get this transportation cost reimbursement program running for you. You have to apply by the 11th of September. So that's pretty crucial. It's coming up, and then applicants will have until November 2nd to provide supporting documentation. So, again, check that out, and hopefully we can keep on farming here in Hawaii. And we're looking forward to a call from a special guest, and maybe I'll just take an opportunity to introduce him in hopes that we're going to hear from him in a couple of moments. But before I get to that even, we had a caller call in about two large brindle brown dogs on the highway in Kilauea at Kolo Road, and they're there right now. So if you're missing your two large brindled brown dogs, or if you live in the neighborhood and you're familiar with those dogs, maybe you could give a call to the owners and alert them as to the situation. I'm sure the dogs are having a fine time. dogs like to get out and have adventures, and unfortunately sometimes cars are involved. But at any rate, we're going to be moving on to a story about a new online service. And this was put together by our good buddy Dr. Jonathan Dienick. He's a soil scientist at UH. We've been lucky enough to get him as a visiting lecturer during our gardening and farming training programs there at Kauai Community College from a few years ago. No doubt some of our listeners were there in the classroom along with me and the other instructors to really super enjoy Jonathan. His teaching style is so captivating, entertaining, and he's just chock full of knowledge about soils. And it seems like we're maybe going to get a call from him right now. But he does have a new soil atlas. It's available online. Hawaii Soil Atlas will give you a great idea about what kind of soils you're looking at in your precise location. Very easy to search your location just by putting in your address, and it'll bring you right there on the GIS map. So we're going to go right now to Jonathan Dienick. He's online. Jonathan, he's not online. Okay. So please call back, Jonathan. We want to let people know more about this program, the importance of soils, and understanding what kind of soil you have. What's that experience been for you, Eileen, of discovering? Because you've farmed in various places, both mainland and here.
I have, and specifically on Kauai, I have worked in different schools in different areas of the island. And many of my clients have very varying soils. Some are on Kalihiwai Ridge, which is a very clay environment with very, very fine particles of soil, and that can cause some problems of plant roots not being able to penetrate the earth and be able to grow. It just
stubby
creates stunting.
Carrots, yeah.
And then in some places like Hanalei, we've got a lot of sand, and people right there on the coast have trouble maintaining organic matter.
Yes.
So
right where it's maybe the most challenging because the lowest amount of rainfall, and then you have the highest amount of drainage.
True.
And so it's those moisture-thirsty plants, like we were just visiting our friend Joanne Watanabe out in Keikaha, and she said, I just can't grow bananas. I love them, but I can't afford the water cost because of the high permeability of the soil.
Right. So it sounds like Jonathan's tool is going to be really helpful to people to say they maybe have done a soil test or maybe they have not done a soil test. They can still go to his atlas and refer to basically a pattern that's happening across the island for in different locations for the soil type that you could possibly have.
And I think one of the most important utilities for using a tool like this, obviously if you already are a steward of a piece of land, important to utilize this tool to understand what's underneath your feet and how you can, what its inherent properties are, whether it is inherently fertile or infertile. And yet, if you're looking for a piece of land, like so many people we know who are budding farmers, who are looking for a place that can be productive, this is key information for you to know. Is this soil inherently fertile or not?
So, so true. And then how you're going to be able to assist that soil, loving it up and providing what it needs to be a successful farmer and get some beautiful yields.
Indeed. So we want to let people know where to find this beautiful soil atlas. It does have the URL, gis.citar.hawaii.edu/soil-atlas, or you can just do an internet search for Hawaii Soil Atlas. And great introductory information. You scroll down to the bottom, you'll find a GIS map, and it's very easy to enter your location information. And I'm just really super stoked on this. It is a revision of a USDA map. Well, I would say various sources of information. The previous version was a bit more technical and a bit more wonky, and this is very user-friendly, approachable tool that people can use to find out information about the quality of the soil. And even if you are planning on building a house, there are certain soils that are not good for engineering or building on. And this is a great way, I imagine, that people in the real estate business would value a map like this to understand the qualities of soil as well from a construction standpoint. Jonathan, give us a call back if you can. I'm sorry we're having technical difficulties here to get you online. We'll try to patch you through in a little while, Jonathan, with lots of really interesting research. He's actually teaching at UH Manoa this semester, but he also does a lot of field research throughout the Pacific. He's recently been in Burma doing extension work, and he comes to Kauai as well to work with the taro farmers in Hanalei. And it's really great to see the expanse of his work, and I think we're going to have him now. Jonathan!
Yes, I'm
here.
Oh,
my goodness. You are a persistent gentleman. Thank you so much for sticking with us.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah. So, hey, thank you so much for the soil atlas you've developed. And I've shared a lot of our thoughts on it, but what would you like to chime in about the experience of putting this together, or how you see people could best use it?
Okay. Well, thank you, Paul. So just background a little bit. I'd like to first and foremost acknowledge my colleague Joshua Silva, who was my former student, who put in a lot of hard work to help us get this together, and my colleague, Dr. Tomoaki Miura, who's a GIS specialist and computer wizard. And without him, I know soils, but I don't know how to manipulate computers. So I'll start off with just acknowledging those two individuals.
Thank you.
This is basically gives us an easy access to the wealth of information that's in Soil Survey, which in their paper form are rather cumbersome documents to handle. And so now with all of us, well, most of us, many of us being able to connect to the internet, we figured it was a good idea to try to get all of that valuable information in one place and clickable with a image, you know, a nice satellite image of our island. So basically it's taking and summarizing the key information from Soil Survey, which is just soil surveys that were conducted by the USDA beginning in 1950, and they just finished the updating of the Big Island last year.
And how much revision has been done recently with the advances of technology? Has it changed quite a bit, or is it pretty much the same?
So for all of the main Hawaiian islands, except the Big Islands, the information here in the Hawaii Soil Atlas, it just comes from the published soil surveys, which were published in 73? I can't remember. So those have not... the data has not been necessarily updated. However, soil names have changed. Mm-hmm. And I guess the last revisions of some of the soil names occurred in the late 90s for Kauai, Oahu, Molokai, Maui, blah, blah. But the soil survey team, USDA, spent an additional, quite a big sum of money to remap the Big Island. Mm-hmm. So the Big Island has been remapped and is quite different in its current map if you were to compare it to, let's say, the map that was developed in 1973.
Right.
And so this soil atlas incorporates the latest mapping of the Big Island.
And those changes would translate into management changes in management decisions?
They could. You know, so if a soil was classified significantly differently, then that would have implications for management. Many of the changes are probably more subtle and, you know, more very detailed. And so at the larger scale for homeowners and basic uses of soil may not be that important.
Right.
I haven't done a one-to-one comparison between the older version and the updated one for Big Island, so I can't speak to that right now.
Great. But so we want to encourage people to use this tool. Mm-hmm. And so when you've made it very user friendly for people who maybe have never considered soil types and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
How would you, now of course you've got students that it's, you know, imminently applicable to, but for our wider audience, how would you suggest that people consider the information that it reveals?
Okay, well, let me just take a quick scenario. So I've got the map right in front of me on my screen, and let's say I was a homeowner in, you know, I'll just pick an area I'm more familiar with. Let's say I'm you know, the airfield in above Hanalei?
Yes, Princeville.
Princeville, right. So Princeville. So if I get the names messed up, Ikalamayau. But let's say for some reason, you know, I have a house up there, and I'm maybe back towards Mount Waialeale, overlooking Hanalei. I don't know what direction that is, south of the highway. Yeah. And I have a house here, and I'm really kind of interested in start, you know, growing something on my land. So I click right by my house, and so here I did. I clicked. And the first thing that you see is this red polygon shows up. That means that that's the specific map unit for this area. And it has a name. In this case, it's Poku. And so what we've done is we've taken rather technical information, and lots of it, and condensed it down into unique categories, location. And well, what do we want to know? Well, we say that this is a well-drained pebbly soil found in the uplands, blah, blah, blah. It is well-suited for and used for pasture and diversified farming, but it is covered by forest and brushland in the mountainous area. So this gives you a general geography. Well, what would you expect to find on this land? And what are some of its important agricultural properties? So that gives you a very general summary. Then you get key climate information. It tells you how much rain in a year on average, and then what are the wet months and the dry months. And it's wet pretty much all year round, because you see in January it's 7.9 inches per month, and in July it's 7.4 inches per month. So over a 50-year period, that on average, that's what you would expect. It gives you temperature. Then it tells you something about water. Does it hold water well? Well, in this case, it's holds water moderately well. And the other thing that's important is, does it drain water well? And in this case, it has fast permeability, meaning it's not going to flood easily. And so if you want to grow flooded crops, you know, like a wetland taro, this probably isn't the best soil for that, because it's going to drain easily. And it tells you that the soil is moist for the majority of the year. Now, we know the last few years have been unusual. Climate is not as it used to be. Climate change, right? So all of this information, of course, has to be filtered through our current situation. And you go along, and it'll tell you something about its fertility. If you click on FERT, naturally infertile soils. So what does that mean? Well, these soils in their natural state, if you hadn't managed them, they're not known for being high in nutrients, nor are they known for holding a lot of nutrients, and that's because of their clay, mm-hmm. type of clay. Now, when they were in the forested condition, they were productive forest soils because they had a thick, organic matter-rich A horizon. So many of these soils we know have been through pineapple, maybe, or sugarcane. In this case, there was probably pineapple on some of these lands, and so they've lost that rich organic matter layer that they used to have. And so if you want to grow vegetables or other horticultural crops, you're going to have to manage them for their low fertility. That means you're going to have to make sure you're getting adequate mineral nutrition and organic matter and whatnot. So then another thing that's important is we have a tab here for phosphorus, because in the tropics, phosphorus can be tightly held by clays, meaning that it's not available for plant use. And in fact, this Po'oku series is really reactive in terms of phosphorus, meaning that it fixes or holds phosphorus very tightly on its clay surfaces.
Yes.
And so you have to be aware of that, and you can manage that. Adding good quality organic matter, manures, for example, fish meals, bud meals, bone meals are all excellent sources of organic phosphorus. But you have to make sure that you pay attention to that, especially in this kind of red soil that we find up on the North Shore. Mm-hmm. Anyway, and we also see that we can click on an acidity tab, and it tells us, well, these soils tend to be very acid. If they were under known pineapple production, they're likely, that's the most acidic you would find. And they could be as low as 4, 4.5. Up in the forested areas where pineapple or no farming occurred, they probably closer to 5.5. In their natural forested state.
Yes.
So liming is important, especially if you want to grow your typical vegetable crops, eggplant, tomato, lettuce, these kinds of things.
Yes.
Okay, and then structure. You get some information about structure. These soils are known for their good physical structure, meaning they have good soil tilth. You can cultivate them, and they still remain, they still retain their good physical structure. You can always improve that structure by adding organic matter, so that's always first and foremost in your mind. So basically, we've taken information that was buried in details and not easy to locate, and put them into simple English sentences, and made some generalizations, but they're based upon the data collected on each of these soils.
Well, it's a great thing. We want to let listeners know this is In the Garden on the Farm on Kauai Community Radio. We're here until 1 o'clock. We're joined right now by Dr. Jonathan Dienick from UH Manoa, and he's a soil researcher, scientist, lecturer, professor, and guru. And so grateful to have you on the show and be able to interface with some of your work here. Gosh, I have a million questions. When are you coming back to Kauai, I guess, is my first one. It's so great to have your knowledge here right on our shores, and maybe we could get you in the studio sometime.
Well, you know, I always like to go to Kauai. I don't have any. I'm teaching now here at Manoa, so my inter-island travels get curtailed quite a bit. You know, I do a lot of work with the taro farmers, but I don't have anything lined up in the near future. But always ready to come to Kauai. I do work with Matt Stevenson, who's the extension agent responsible for cattle and goats and
yes.
chickens. So
yeah. We so appreciate him as well. You guys have a great team. We're really grateful for it. And thank you so much for this. And would love to speak with you coming up soon. Maybe we can arrange another discussion on soils because there's so much to learn.
Okay, well, thanks, Paul. Always good to talk with you, and thank you for having me on the show, and hopefully I was helpful.
Absolutely, Jonathan. Thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Aloha.
Aloha.
Dr. Jonathan Dienick with his Hawaii Soil Atlas, a great way to look at the qualities of soil beneath our feet and make good management decisions. So thanks for that. You can do an internet search for Hawaii Soil Atlas to find that tool online. And moving on, we're going to talk about some weather extremes, a climate change that Jonathan was referring to, and some good solutions that people are coming up with, homegrown solutions in California, and then we'll have a look in Hawaii as well. And Eileen is going to share a story with us.
Thanks so much, Paul, for the opportunity to do that. I have read at least 3 articles in the last 6 months about an organic farmer named Paul Kaiser, who's having incredible success farming in desert-like El Nino-inspired conditions in Sebastopol, California. Kaiser's techniques have the potential to inspire agribusiness to adopt his ideas. And it was interesting, Dr. Dienick, was alluding to worn-out soils on Kauai. And he was talking about how forested soils are constantly dropping all of their foliage and helping the microbiology within the soil structure grow and help keep the soil fluffy, keeping organic matter present. And really, I'd like to express my personal concern about an environmental issue that could be more pressing than deforestation or pollution. And I believe that that is poor soil and soil loss. And that's what Dr. Dienick was alluding to. So before we get into what I have to share about Paul Kaiser, I'd like to explore that. Yes. I'd like to first ask the question, why do we need healthy soil? Well, seems obvious, but we need healthy soil to have healthy plants, to have healthy animals, to have healthy people, to grow trees, and therefore have clean air. Yeah? Yes.
All these things.
And then I'd like to ask, how do our soils get depleted? Well, as Robin touched on last week, one way is urban sprawl. Uh-huh. Another way, another equally damaging way, is for poor farming practices. And so,
like the Dust Bowl problem of over-tilling, yeah?
Exactly, exactly. Through our history, we have deforested. We've made fields. Then first the crops are great, and then the yields are high. And then, you know, now there's no forest there anymore because we deforested it to make the field. Mm. So the forest is no longer generating organic matter.
Right.
To protect the ground. And it used to drop leaves on it, and animals would live and die and poop on it and feed the soil's microbes. Mm-hmm. The field is now left open to erosion and damage via how do we get erosion through wind, heavy rain, sun. And many large agribusinesses also practice heavy tillage, which further damages soil structure, killing microbes who retain water in their bodies. Mm-hmm. And that creates compaction.
Right. It's so easy when we do gardening or farming, we're kind of chasing away nature. We're chasing away a plant cover of the soil. We're chasing away the animals that we're re-nutrifying by pooping on the land, like the hundreds of thousands of seabirds that used to live on Kauai before humans arrived. We're chasing all that replenishment away, and then we're just using up all of the energy in the system unless we take some special measures.
Right. Trying to control this. The history is that we've been trying to control the system and then add what we need to it instead of supporting the system.
Exactly.
So after that compaction has happened from the erosion, now there's less air for the roots to penetrate, and then weeds pop up. And like you're saying, that's nature's way of trying to repair herself. And it's trying to create a new forest floor. But what do we do with those weeds? Well, what does agribusiness do with those weeds?
Sprays poison.
Exactly. Yeah. Sprays herbicides like Roundup, which damages the soil further. Mm-hmm. Now the plants you're trying to grow are struggling, and the pests come. Then chemical pesticides are applied, and then you get fungal problems, like, for instance, the papaya ring spot. Right? Then what do we do about that? What has agribusiness done in the past for that?
Pesticides or
fungicides.
Fungicides.
Exactly, yeah. And then they plow again, and then agribusiness generally tries to pump up their vegetables with chemical petrol fertilizers, which are shipped to Hawaii with petrol products.
Yeah.
So, okay, that cycle left me super exhausted explaining it, and I'm sure many of us are aware of it. But what is more important for us to understand is that this cycle leaves the soil exhausted, mm-hmm. literally with nothing more to give. It's depleted.
Yep.
So now I'm going to get back to Paul Kaiser, who is this farmer in Sebastopol who's having incredible success building soil.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and people are taking a good look at this. They're looking at what he's doing and seeing if it's applicable to big business, big farming on a large scale, because soil scientists are finally taking note that these practices have been that have been going on since the 40s are not working. They're leaving the soil worked. So Paul Kaiser's background is that he was in the Peace Corps in Gambia, West Africa, near the Sahara Desert, a super dry place where he taught agroforestry. And so what he was doing there was building biomass, and therefore he was building fertility. He was planting native trees, things that could grow well there.
And it's a matter of life or death in those situations.
You bet. Yeah. You bet. And so just number one rule for him there in West Africa was to keep your dirt protected, number one. And then that would give you success. So now on his farm in Sebastopol, where the typical hard pan starts at about 1 foot deep, Kaiser is enjoying 4 feet of soft, fluffy topsoil, rich in microbes and therefore water in a drought-ridden California, where he's making $100,000 an acre off his crops. And so I have a few things to point out about his practices. What is he growing? He has a huge biodiversity on his farm and a healthy ecosystem that sheds its leaves and helps feed itself. He's growing trees, native shrubs, and a diversity of crops. He has ponds with ducks and chickens. And maybe you're wondering, how did he create his topsoil? I was.
Certainly. Let's start doing it here.
Yeah. Well, number one was cardboard. That's a permaculturist's tool there.
Yes.
And why cardboard? Well, because it invites the earthworms. I've had many of my permaculture teachers share with me that cardboard is like a worm condo. It's got all those little holes in it when you're looking at the corrugated cardboard, and all the little worms go in there and just have a little heyday breaking it down and putting it through their bodies, creating vermicompost, and in turn helping microbiology and exuding minerals into the soil.
Yes. We've joked that the cardboard must come with worm eggs in the car. It's the only way that I can explain how many worms are underneath the cardboard as it's breaking down. It's really miraculous.
They love it. It is amazing. So what he does is he puts the cardboard right over the weeds. He's into no machine tillage at all. He puts the cardboard right over the weeds and then covers it with the compost and transplants directly. He transplants his seedlings directly into the compost. Before each new crop, then he adds another 2 inches more of compost. So with that method, he has built this 4 feet of soft, fluffy topsoil.
Wow. Over what period of time do you know that he's been doing this?
I don't know.
Okay.
I'd love to find
that
out.
The article didn't sound like he's been at it a super long time.
No, it doesn't. Yeah. It doesn't. So what are some other things that he does? He does not disturb the topsoil. He did not disturb the topsoil that he had in the first place. Like I said, he doesn't use machines. What he does use is a broad fork. Mm-hmm. And he does not flip his soil either. So if you're flipping your soil, then you're exposing a lot of the microbes and a lot of the worms and all these little guys who are building the soil, and they dry out right away. So you're disturbing them, you're exposing them to the sun, and then they die. So he just uses the broad fork to open it up and allow for some drainage.
Mm-hmm. So now this would be considered a very low till method. I mean, it's not really, it's not really no till at all, where you never
True, because he's using a broad fork.
Oxygen into the soil and all that kind of thing. But it's very low.
Very
low. And it is the practice of multiple people. You guys used to do it Do you use a broad fork now?
I do. That's all
okay.
I use.
Awesome.
Yep.
Awesome. I know yep. One Song Farm and various other farmers on the island are busy with their broad fork.
Absolutely. We have pet names for our broad fork. And then another thing he does is he adds lots of compost. So he is producing his own compost from things that organic matter that he creates on his farm. And then he's also buying compost from a contractor who's making compost from green waste, such as Mark Freeman over there at Heart and Soul Organics in Molua'a. And another thing he's doing is that he covers the earth with compost and mulch. Uh-huh. So that's a top-down approach again, covering his compost, covering his precious compost with mulch to avoid all those erosional influences.
Right. And these, again, these are practices that are being employed on Kauai, and it comes back, though, there are so many site-specific situations that limit our ability, you know, our ability to get high quality compost or time to make it or wild chickens that spread the mulch everywhere or so many things. Agroforestry and the ability to attract beneficial insects and birds that help to limit the impacts of damaging pests to our crops. These are all things that we're playing with, but it sounds like it's almost like he's come up with an ideal recipe for his particular kitchen, and great to look deeper into. Very interested to know what kind of soil type does he have, and how does that either challenge or facilitate his success?
Mm-hmm.
Is it truly applicable to a subtropical situation like Hawaii, where we have such different soils, where we have such different rates of decomposition as we do, as would happen in a more temperate area? So all these questions stimulated
true,
in my head.
True. Well, I believe that the fact that he's covering his compost is just such a valuable thing. Not only is he covering his compost in his fields with mulch, but he's also covering his compost piles with cotton and wool blankets, which encourage air, and they keep the heat down in the pile from just blasting and killing microbes instead of using plastic.
Okay.
And so just what he's doing, covering his valuables, is valuable to us in the subtropics as well, because there in Sebastopol, he may just have scorching sun and he may not have the huge rains that we have here, but you know, huge rains can just erode your valuable compost away just as quick as blaring sun.
Yep.
One more technique that he uses is that he, within this low tillage system, he leaves the roots in the ground of the plants that he's harvested, which add to the organic matter in the soil and feed his worms that he's already established in the garden. So instead of pulling out all the roots when you're done harvesting, maybe try leaving the roots in. And many, many times when I've cracked the ground again with the broad fork, I see a plethora of worms all around those rotting roots that I've left in the ground. And
all the beautiful mycelium of the fungi.
Oh, yeah.
Eating all of that and
demonstrating
so much life.
Yeah. So personally, Paul Kaiser was very inspiring to me, and because I do use many of these techniques already here on Kauai, and many of the farmers I know and have been associated with use these methods. There were a couple little gems in there that we could add, but I'm particularly inspired because of all the areas that have been, because I would love to help remediate many of these soils on Kauai that have been damaged by agribusiness and are being damaged by agribusiness. And I just think that if we culminate as many ideas as we possibly can from practitioners like this, that we can come up with a plan to do that. And agribusiness can see that there's another way, and that way is mimicking nature.
Yeah. And how beautiful it'll be when these ideas that are being implemented in a 1-3 acre farm setting can be done in hundreds of acres somehow when we make that paradigm shift.
True, true. Or beautiful. Many, many small farms.
The 100-acre farm becomes, 25-acre farms.
True.
That sounds good.
So just to put out a little blast about Paul Kaiser there, you can read more about his methods and successes at Craftsmanship, CraftsManship.net. Look up the Drought Fighters, or UC Agriculture and Natural Resources. They have an article on his successes at his farm, Singing Frogs Farm. You can also like him on Facebook, Singing Frogs Farm. I just liked them last week. And there are a couple of videos on YouTube. He is gaining huge popularity, and I wish him luck. And lots of people are looking at his methods and really getting excited about applying them on a bigger scale.
Yeah, very cool. Thank you, Eileen.
That's you bet.
Super news. And we are rounding out our show. We want to encourage people to stick around for Kauai Vibrations with Tracy starting at 1 p.m. And a lot of great programming following that. And I always forget to mention somehow King Zor's show, but I dial it in and every Wednesday evening, so I want to give a big shout out to King Zor, and really appreciate his show and all of his fine tone worthy selections that he plays. But we're gonna finish off with a short discussion on molasses. We didn't get around to it a couple of weeks ago, but just want to mention, since we introduced it, molasses is a popular product here on Kauai because it is a byproduct of the sugar production industry and used to be very easily obtained. Well, it's harder now. I hear it's still being produced on Maui, but a lot of people are holding on to this molasses that was freed up when the sugar mill closed in Lihue, and I was recently able to acquire quite a volume of it. So interested to figure out what this product could be used for. Molasses, the byproduct once crystallized sugar has been removed from sugar syrup, and blackstrap molasses is the one that we're most familiar with, comes from the third boil of sugarcane juice. Brown sugar often is white sugar with molasses mixed back in. Molasses, being high in calcium, magnesium, and iron, also contains potassium, used for various things like ethanol and rum production, livestock feeds, bioremediation uses, can be used to activate effective microorganisms. It can be used to heat up a compost pile. It is marketed for use in hydroponic systems, controls odor in homemade fish emulsion, can be a spreader sticker for foliar spraying. And yet there's not a lot of scientific knowledge out there. And Eileen joined me on the search for more information. And did you come up with anything?
Well, I did a bit. I am involved with a group of farmers in Molawa'a, and we are experimenting with some of my fellow farmers are experimenting with using molasses as a soil drench on their fields to kill or stunt weeds. Mm-hmm. Specifically, they're targeting nutgrass. And the belief is that the drench will tie up the excess nitrates that the weeds flourish on and then proliferate the beneficial bacteria. But I was reading that Elaine Ingham, author of The Soil Food Web, warns to check your calcium level first by doing a soil test, because if you have poor soil structure, you may drive the soil into reduced oxygen conditions, which can result in the plants you desire to grow after nitrates return to not do so well or even die. So I learned that. And we haven't found the perfect combo there yet. I've always wondered, well, if I go ahead and do my soil drench, then how do I know it's time? How do I know that the nitrates are freed up and
right.
now it's time to plant my crop?
Right.
So I'd like to learn more about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, there needs to be more scientific research. In speaking with Joseph Dunsmore, his recommendation using it as a pre-plant, not during the cropping cycle, which some people do because of this tying up of the nitrates, can actually starve your crop and potentially even feed bacteria that could be eating the roots of your plants, which we don't want. But but certainly in a pre-plant situation to kill weeds, great to do some more research in that way. And then also recently, UHC TAR looking at the value of adding molasses as an adjunct to vermicompost tea making. In their scientific research, showed that it had no positive effect, nor negative, but mm-hmm. that it just wasn't, it didn't make a vermicompost tea any more effective when they looked at the results of plant growth. So I'm thinking at this stage, more valuable for perhaps combating weeds, but also to stimulate microorganisms when bioremediation needs to occur within a soil that's contaminated. Very happy to report that
yes.
the Regeneration Seed Center just got back a clean bill of health on the 250 toxic chemicals panel that's done by an ag lab in Portland that looks at all of the persistent agricultural chemicals that may be left. So we're not in that need, but certainly many soils on Kauai need some bioremediation, and maybe this molasses is best used to digest the persistent chemicals that are found in the
yes,
soil.
Yes, please.
Yes. So that's what we have for molasses for you today. We want to give a quick announcement on the Seeds of Time film showing. It's happening Tuesday, September 8th at 5:30 p.m. at Kauai Community College Center in Puhi. This is part of NTBG and Kauai Community College's Balance of Nature lecture series. And this is a 1.25-hour film taking viewers on around the world journey with agricultural pioneer Cary Fowler as he works frantically to help others collect and preserve the world's seed diversity. For more information on the film, you can go to seedsoftimemovie.com. If you'd like to, and we want to let people know, if you want to have your ag-related event or announcement shared on air, please email it to us a couple of weeks in advance to inthegardenonthefarm@gmail.com. To hear previous broadcasts of the show, go to kkcr.org, click the audio archive tab at the top of the page. And we want to thank the other members of our In the Garden on the Farm team, our engineers Dean and Dove, our phone tech Mac, our webmaster Laura Christine. And please stay tuned for Kauai Vibrations coming up right now. And want to let you know, this is KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL in Haleiwa. Can you lead us out, Eileen? With our outro.
This has been on the sure. This has been In the Garden and on the Farm with your host Paul and sub co-host Eileen. We'd like to thank our guests on the show today, who was Jonathan Dienick. And please tune in next week for more stimulating conversation on our relationship with the life of the land that gives us life.
Aloha.
Aloha.